We're going to take a joke pretty far, you guys. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here because we are going somewhere new today. So I'm glad you're with me. We're going to bring you an interview I did that is just wow. Unlike anything I've ever done on a mental health podcast before. I mean, in this line of work, you get used to the idea of meeting some unusual people, people who work in kind of unique ways in their heads. And I certainly have met a lot of people, but this guy, my gosh, I interviewed him a few weeks ago, and we're going to roll the tape now. And make sure to stick around afterwards, after this interview, because Gary Gulman, the comedian, will be with me also in this episode. The original Great Depression, Gary Gulman. We're going to try to figure out what the hell happened in this first interview. So just, you know, make yourself comfortable, and I don't know what else to say. Gabe, let's just roll that tape. We might not think much about people who are not clinically depressed, people out there who have no mental disorders at all, regular people who sometimes feel sad or nervous, but it doesn't rise to the level of a diagnosable condition. But the truth is that the just fine are walking among us every day. Chances are one of your neighbors is fine, or you had a teacher or boss or coworker who lived with being okay every day. Even some celebrities are okay. Carter Beauford, drummer for the Dave Matthews Band, is just fine. Charlotte Ray from The Facts of Life, Renee Arend, who developed the Chicken McNugget, all have led productive lives without being depressed or anything. Well, let's add one more name to that list. Comedian and writer Josh Gondelman. He's currently a producer and writer on Desus and Mero on Showtime, also the author of the book Nice Try. And yes, he's unencumbered by mental illness. He agreed to speak with us today. Josh, hello.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure.
When was the first time... Yeah, pleasure. When was the first time you realized that there was nothing weird going on with your mind? When? At what age did you stop and say, hey, something's right here?
I guess, like, when I was a kid, it felt like we were... I was told a lot that, like, things were going to be okay. And yeah. So I generally trusted that. And then I think as I got older and maybe into college, and certainly when I started doing stand-up comedy and started meeting people from all different places and all different life experiences, I started to realize that like maybe my lack of experience with clinical depression was anomalous when I started, you know, meeting other comedians.
Yeah. And was your family supportive of things like not needing to go to therapy or you know, not having to go to a drugstore to get medication? Like, were they okay with that?
Well, I'm from Massachusetts, so there's like kind of a robust culture of not going to therapy. So I do feel like I had a pretty strong support system in place there. Although I do think that even though I don't think I have any diagnosable conditions, I do think I could benefit from some help with coping. But, you know, so far I haven't, it's not something I've done, and my family has been very supportive.
Good, good. And then how about like at school growing up? Because I know, I mean, kids can be cruel. Kids can tease. Kids can look for the things that are unusual about you and call them out. And it's, you know, it's almost a primal thing. Like going to school every day, knowing that you had no therapist, that there was no prescription. Like when people started naming off the, you know, in junior high or something, naming off the things that they had been learning about themselves in their past in therapy, and you had nothing to say. Like, what was that like?
Well, I mean, I definitely felt like I would get teased, not necessarily for that. There was some teasing in my past, but fortunately, I made it through, as you said, just fine. I feel like I coped pretty well. But also, I grew up, you know, I was born in 1985, and I think it was a time before that therapy was kind of normalized for kids. So it definitely feels like a positive development that more kids now have access to mental health resources in a way that like just didn't feel not even accessible, but like on the table for kids when I was growing up, when I was in middle school. I think it was just like a lot of like, you know, walking it off or what, or I think that's a Gary Gulman joke, right? About that being,
right.
What he was offered as mental health as a kid. And it's like that, I definitely feel like even though we're a couple of years apart, that was generationally what we had.
Yeah. Yeah. And Gary's from Massachusetts as well. So
yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's very, very, a very Bostonian thing.
Right, right. And we know now that there are several or up to several comedians that are okay, like you. People, there's a brotherhood and sisterhood out there, I assume. Was your mental stability what led to getting into comedy?
I don't know. That's a great question. I think it's what has stopped me from quitting more than It's what got me into it. Yeah. Okay. I think it is such a, I think a lot of fields are like this, but it's such a stressful field to be in. I've been very fortunate to be working very consistently for the past several years in writers' rooms and getting booked to do stand-up. But I think there is a lot of like up and down, a lot of instability. And I think if I did not feel like I had as stable a support system and disposition, I think I would have long ago been like, forget it. I'm going to just, I'm going to go back to grad school, or I'm going to work at a watch factory or something, just something where you can do the same thing and not feel like you're at the whims of kind of a weird, capricious industry. Although maybe watch factories are like that too now.
It could be. We don't know. But so then it sounds like, you know, a lot of people would think being completely well-adjusted, you know, that's a really strange thing. But it almost seems like it's helped you when you're met with stressful situations. You can almost see like, oh, here are healthy ways I can handle it. And then that helps you navigate the stress.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there are times where I am stressed out or I feel sad or disappointed or flustered, but I think that they pass, and I know this about myself, is that those periods will pass in like a pretty reasonable amount of time. Huh. Yeah, and so it very rarely rises to the occasion, these events of like a long-term kind of impediment to my relationships or my work, you know, my professional life. But I do think one of the problems that I have is that sometimes when I feel like when I kind of hit a low point, because I'm out of practice with those low points, I'm like out of practice coping. So I don't know what to do. Like, I feel like 50 years ago, I would just go out on the streets and look for a guy to fight or something. But I don't know. Like, I don't deal well with like anger or disappointment because I don't have like a strong checklist. I just kind of know like, okay, well, I know this will pass, and maybe I'll take a walk and see if that helps. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But usually, like a couple good night's sleeps will do it for me.
That's interesting. I'm unfamiliar with that. So you don't take all your anger and spite and fear and just shove it way down deep inside to have it kind of bubble up in unexpected ways later?
I try not to.
Oh.
But I do think, again, not having had a lot of therapy in my life, the problem that I have with telling people how I feel is that then other people know how I feel and I still feel that way. But I know it's important. Even being from New England, I understand it's important to communicate with people and like be honest about my feelings and not worry that they won't accept me if I feel a certain way, and trust that people, you know, in my life are loving and supportive of me. So I try not to stuff it. But sometimes I don't do a good job because, again, I don't really have a lot of practice being like, oh, I feel really terrible right now. I need support in these ways. I do sometimes feel like I'm stuffing a little bit because I'm like, I'll think that I've been really communicative about like how bad I'm feeling, where I'll be like, you know, I think I'd rather not. Like, I'm this, I think it would be better to do another time. And then someone will go like, oh, what if we did it now? And I'll be like, yeah, all right. And so I do a little stuffing, but I do also a pretty good job of bouncing back from the stuff.
Yeah. One of my good friends is John Hodgman, who's also from the New England area.
Yes.
And I know that his condition of being okay has worked its way into a lot of his work, you know, because it's a comedian, a writer kind of speaks to their experience. Has your being just fine been a part of your comedy as well?
Absolutely. I think that being just fine is something that influences my work. And I think if I were not just fine, I don't know what I would talk about on stage or in writing sometimes. Partly because, like, I feel like I'm making my best work when I'm at my most functional. Like, I feel like it's not the depth of feeling necessarily, but it's my own capacity to process and articulate it that helps me do the work. And so I think, like, when I'm feeling my best and when I'm feeling my most fine, I have the most capacity to, like, take experiences and thoughts and insights and turn them into, like, writing and performance.
Yeah. You harness your healthiness and you make it work for you.
Yeah. I feel like it really fuels my art, my okayness. Mm.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff do you talk about on stage that reflects that? I mean, I know I've heard you do some material about enjoying watching basketball.
Love watching basketball. I'll talk about that. I like to talk about things I enjoy. I talk a lot about my wife and, like, how I feel really happy and supported in our marriage and how much I like and admire her and what my love for her and appreciation for her, like, makes me notice about myself. Sometimes in positive ways and sometimes in less positive ways, but it is coming from a place of, like, my life is good and I feel like I'm thriving and these are things I'm coming to understand as I grow older and develop and mature. And it comes a lot from me being okay. And I think audiences have really responded to that. When people are asked about my comedy, they often say, "He's okay."
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've referred to you a few times as the good boy of comedy. And yeah, I mean, I imagine sometimes people who are perfectly okay come out to comedy clubs. You know, they are probably more likely to because they can just get out of the house and say, "Hey, that seems like fun."
Yeah.
And that's as deep as it goes. Do you feel like you've been accepted by the depressed comedians, or do they keep their distance and they don't want to trust you?
I mean, I do think sometimes people who are living with depression have a tendency to be a little withdrawn. And I don't know. I try not to take it personally. But I do think occasionally there is a skepticism about my generally cheerful demeanor. But I think, like, showing up and showing that I'm a good member of the community, that, you know, the comedy community, artistic community, whatever, I think hopefully I can break down the walls of my annoyingly cheerful personality and really connect.
Well, I would think too that being able to glimpse darkness and walk through darkness as a well-adjusted person is going to connect you with some of those people, even if you have this, I guess, a talent or an ability to then walk out of the darkness and into the rest of the world.
And I do think that that's true. I think, like, a lot of the time when people talk about, like, optimism and someone being an optimist, they think about it as, like, someone who thinks the world is good, just, like, no notes, the globe. And I don't think that's what optimism is. To me, optimism and having the capacity to, like, and the just, like, lucky brain to, like, feel okay and to, like, look at things that are difficult and see them for, like, how they are, you know, right? See situations as being bad and then continue to move forward in terms of, like, trying to change them or live with them, adjust to them, and, like, have empathy for other people dealing with them is, like, a big part of being optimistic. It's not just, like, gosh, you know, it's beautiful, a sunset, end of story.
right. Yeah, no, I think we need to probably give credit to optimists and welcome them in and recognize their rights. You know, that's...
Yeah, I'm kind of an optimist's rights activist. Okay, that's, if anything in my work sticks out to people, I'm kind of an ORA. God, I hope that's not an acronym for something really horrible.
You would like to politely raise your hand and remind people in a friendly way of those rights.
Yeah, that's right.
Take to maybe not so much the streets as at least the cul-de-sacs and well-maintained sidewalks.
we're here, we're fine, unless that's a problem for you, and then we can talk about it.
I brought some muffins. Would you like
them? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You work on the show Desus and Marrow, which is a great show, and they seem like terrific guys.
Yeah, they're great.
Have they been reasonable to work with and making allowance for your lack of conditions?
I mean, I'm mocked pretty openly in the office and sometimes on television for my general personality and disposition, but I do feel like I'm not discriminated against in any kind of meaningful way. Okay. Except for being from Boston, where I do feel like I'm roundly punished.
Yeah, mocked thoroughly all the way around. I mean, are they, those guys, I mean, you never know when people seem to enjoy life and one another's company, whether it's all a show or whether they're actually like that. Are they actually just fine themselves? Are they optimists too?
Well, I think they're both very open about their experiences with the world and like therapy and stuff. Marrow, especially, I think we'll talk about anxiety being something that he deals with. And like, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but I think their openness about the things they do to be mentally healthy is like really wonderful and really special. And they'll you know, if it comes up on the show, they will be really open about it. And we did a piece last season. Gosh, I think last season, maybe earlier this year, talking to therapists just about like who are working with clients remotely, and what that experience was like. Because I think the hosts and the staff of the show recognize that this year and a half now has been like especially tough on people, even those who are largely fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I've recently started going back into the office to see my therapist, and so she was a head floating in the two-dimensional rectangle of my monitor, but with a full face and just no no body at all. And now she's a three-dimensional person with a body whose face I mostly can't see because she's wearing a mask.
Oh, interesting. Totally flipped it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's, but now you know what her collection of pants looks like, or other waist down garments, dresses, skirts, what have you, jumpsuits.
Right. Does
I'm
she
just gonna keep naming clothes. Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. The socks,
shoes, certainly.
And then now I know, like, oh, okay, she folds her legs at the ankle instead of further up. You know, it's. I mean, therapy is a process of discovery, and yeah. She was actually able to say, I was describing something, and she said, oh, I saw your eyebrows go up slightly when I said that. So what clicked there? What's going on there? I'm like, oh, you're good if you're that good at reading eyebrows.
And was that over Zoom, or was it once you got in person?
No, that was in person.
Wow.
But again, it was from like at least 6, if not more, feet away.
Right. So social distancing, but emotionally very close.
Yeah.
And in tune.
Yeah, no, I think she's one of your people. I think she's one of the people who's just fine. And, you know, and still works and functions in society. Well, let's get to know your culture. Do you gather regularly with other normal people? Are there support groups? Are there group outings to museums or something? How does that work?
I guess I try not to be cliquey about it, and I try to
have friends in various different groups.
In various different groups, yeah.
Yeah.
But I do think, like you were saying earlier, sometimes people who have a smoother time getting out of bed and into the world are easier to keep plans with. But I try not to discriminate. And
sure.
You know.
Well, that's healthy.
Some of my best friends are neurodiverse.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, and I got a note here too. Meredith Auld, who is an author and the wife of Tom Brokaw, apparently is also totally fine.
Just fine? Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, they're everywhere.
That's good to hear.
Are there foods that the just fine like to eat? Are there particular songs or dances of the culture?
You know, these are things that, like, as a just fine person, I'm not good at dancing, but I try not to let that impede me from dancing. I think that's part of being just fine. Yeah, I'm really bad at it. When I was a child, my father once told me, Josh, you're supposed to dance with the music, not against it. And
not in opposition.
And it's been a lifelong struggle to continue dancing. And it's not that I have a bad sense of rhythm. I have a pretty good sense of keeping on beat mentally and yeah. like keeping rhythm with clapping or whatever. It's just my body does not acknowledge the rhythm of my brain.
Your musculature, your...
Yeah. I would say physically I'm slightly less than just fine.
Okay.
My mental health outstrips my physical health.
And, you know, for me and for regular listeners of this show, if we were to go out and dance and find that we're really not so great at dancing, I mean, the logical thing is to run away, cry, never attend anything anyone is dancing mm-hmm. ever again, and blame ourselves for being so stupid. Do you, mm-hmm. I mean, I imagine you do the same thing.
I would say I don't enter dance competitions. Oh, you know, okay. I know my strengths and weaknesses, but if we're at a wedding or a concert, I'll get into it a little bit, sometimes sober, sometimes after having a couple of drinks, and I'll just do my best. I mean, I do think that as much as it is something you'd see on a pillow, you know, stitched onto a pillow, it does help to dance as if no one is watching you.
Oh, that's what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that must be an expression from your people.
I think that comes from my people, the people who write the pillows that you see at Target. That is kind of my ultimate career. That would be my career peak, is just to write kind of driftwood slogans.
Yeah, to write the next Live, Laugh, Love.
Yeah. Do you think the person who originally wrote Live, Laugh, Love just collects bank on that? You think I make so many royalties, or do you think it just kind of got away from them?
Well, I think it got away from them most, and that belief comes from having interviewed Kelly Williams Brown, who is a brilliant author and wrote the book Adulting,
mm-hmm.
which as a word, as a term, as an expression, completely got away from her. And she yes. describes it now as a word that she sees on throw pillows at Target
yep.
or in reference to wine at book clubs.
Sure. I'm going to go straight to the throw pillows without being brilliant. that's where I'm going to make my legacy.
Yeah. No, skip books. That's more of an our people thing anyway. Just get straight to the throw pillows. So what do you think about the future? Like if you stay just fine the rest of your life, are you just fine with that? Like, what if this just stays this way?
I think that's okay. And I think if I stay fine, that's great. I'm open to things being different. I've had I think as many people have, a kind of taxing year and a half on mental health. And so I've explored what it would mean to not be just fine. But if I continue to feel generally pretty good, I think that it's a condition that I can live with going into the future. And I think one thing that I can do is try to employ that kind of generously, right? Like be a resource to friends and loved ones who might need a little extra emotional bandwidth or time or understanding. And that I think is like kind of the just fine privilege and the just fine obligation. With decent mental health comes great responsibility. Yeah,
comes a sensible amount of responsibility.
That's what Spider-Man would say in therapy.
That's from the comic book series Well-Adjusted Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just like, look,
yeah.
I've grieved the loss of my beloved family member and have come through it, and they're always with me, and it's okay to be sad. Yeah. And sometimes I'll feel sad, but it doesn't have to lead me to invent suits.
Yeah.
If I don't want to.
They didn't publish a lot in the series of The Amazingly Okay Spider-Man.
Yeah. The Holden Steady Spider-Man. I think those comics are just called like Peter from Photography Club.
Yeah. He gets bit by a spider. And yeah, that's weird. I got bit by a spider. Mm-hmm. And then everything just... It doesn't have an effect on anything else that happens.
Slightly phobic of spiders for the yeah. rest of his life, but not so much that it changes his day to day.
Yeah, maybe just keeps a safe distance from spiders.
Yep. Little extra careful when he's putting a piece of paper under him and a jar over them to transfer them outside.
Josh Gondelman, good luck in your lack of struggle. And
Thank you, John. It's been so lovely to speak with you.
Of course it has. That's Josh Gondelman. He's so brave and cheerful, thrifty, all those Boy Scout qualities. Josh mentioned Gary Gulman in that interview, and we got Gary's response to that interview with Josh after the break. You know what I like? I like when things are easy. Man, easy things are just the best, because obviously there are plenty of parts of life already that can be very, very difficult. So bring on the easy. My favorite easy things, I have to admit, are when something seems like it would be difficult, but turns out to be easy. Oh, I love that. Case in point, building your own website and web presence with Squarespace. I did this years ago and found it to be delightfully simple. I can build a site, make changes, redesign everything if I want, all very simple. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. You don't need to be a web guru. You become the guru. Start a completely personalized website with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. You can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. They accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. Upload video content, organize your video library, and showcase your content on beautiful video pages. You can even sell access to your video library by adding a paywall to your content. So why not get started now? Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/depresh to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. squarespace.com/depresh. We're back, and we just heard from comedian and writer Josh Gondelman, who is just fine, no depression, no anxiety, might go to a therapist someday, but just to get somehow even better. It's hard for me to process all this idea of the non-depressed comedian. So I've called up one of the most depressed comedians, the original Depresh. Before Depresh Mode was Gary Gulman's special, The Great Depresh, part of Gary's long career in comedy and depression. He will be in the Depression Hall of Fame if the builders of it can ever get out of bed to actually erect the structure. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, I would imagine that the Depression Hall of Fame would have very loose hours.
Yeah.
To accommodate people getting there 2 hours later than they expected to get there. Yeah.
Some days it might not open at all. Some days it might be open all night, because what else are you going to do? Right. So we're talking on Zoom. Are you joining me from your actual bed?
I am on my bed.
Thank you. Good. That's good. Thank you for staying on brand.
Oh my gosh. I hadn't even thought about how on brand that is, but I work so much on my bed as far as my writing that it is only natural that I would be here when 1 o'clock came along.
Yeah, naturally. You listened to my talk with the just fine comedian Josh Gondelman. How do you feel about what he said?
I mean, it was much more compelling than it had any right to be.
Yeah.
Because he had no struggles, and I just,
there's no conflict in the scene. It's just,
yeah, it was so brave of him to admit that what he has put out there could not be discounted by the depression, anxiety, and inner turmoil that went into creating it. So this is really the best he could have done. He had no excuses, and he's gonna done a great job, but he has no excuses to fall back on. And I mean, at any moment I can blame my parents.
And sure. A joke doesn't sell. It's because of something that happened when you were 8.
Exactly. That I didn't believe in it because I didn't believe in myself, because my family didn't believe in me. So I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he doesn't stay in bed every morning.
I know. Like, the courage to just to not stay in bed is is amazing. To me, it almost strikes me as like a fuel kind of thing, like for an engine. Where is he getting the fuel to power this thing if not from the darkness? You know, it's like seeing an appliance that has no batteries or a cord. Like, how does this go?
Yeah, I always think that without being ignored and neglected, and also having this chip on my shoulder, this self-imposed chip on my shoulder, that there would be no other reason to pursue creativity with such zeal and dedication, and for somebody like him to go out there with clean burning fuel and with it, without this chip on his shoulder, it's really quite miraculous. He has no other reason to do it besides the fact that he enjoys it.
What?
It's twisted.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like he filled his car with tap water and then just drove it around the block.
It's exactly right. It's really extraordinary. And I mean, it also denies that whole thing. And I was talking about this with Tig Notaro recently, and she made such a great point, and I had never even considered it. She said, it doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be a struggle and suffering. And I was like, what kind of insanity, witchcraft nonsense is this? Of course it has to be hard. Otherwise everyone would do it and we wouldn't be special.
Yeah. Right. I mean, then your special, The Great Depression, would just be Gary Gulman's doing great.
Yeah, and he's super funny.
Yeah,
and he didn't have to check himself into a hospital. He was just funny. How dare he?
Yeah, you'd go up on stage and say, "Let me tell you about the time that I didn't have to move in with my mother because everything was okay."
Yeah, I just visited her and I left the same day.
Right, because I don't live there. Of course no. I left. Well, you know, and then you think about the adversity that Josh has to overcome in just being alone on stage, whereas someone like you said, okay, here's this very aggressive force, this depression in my life, this very powerful entity. I'm going to hire it. I'm going to put it to work. I'm going to have it fill out its tax forms. And I'm going to make it pay its own way. Like, instead of living rent-free, you started charging it rent and made some good money off it.
Yeah, it is really extraordinary that I've been able to take my mental illness and make it into a revenue stream. It's not every mentally ill person that gets to monetize it. So I'm eternally grateful for that. But I always wonder, here's who Josh Gondelman is in the sitcom Hall of Fame. He is Marilyn Munster. In that he is in a family of monsters, and he is the beautiful one, and he feels left out and uncomfortable, and it's just, I mean, nobody takes into account what an extraordinary character Marilyn Munster was, and how much symbolism and everything that goes into it. I'm sure it was some sort of subversive blacklisting of communist writers' commentary, but to me, it's Josh Gondelman and every other comedian who has their shit together.
Right. Yeah. No, I never really thought about this sort of intense, well-masked self-loathing of Marilyn Munster all the way through
Totally.
Like, 'cause she comports herself quite well, but she must just be burning on the inside. Well, Gary, before we go here, I have a list of just some tips that I wrote up for people who think, well, maybe I'm just fine and I don't even know it. And so I want to bounce some of these off you, see if you have any other thoughts that people should be on the lookout for as potential, I guess, green flags. The one pair of sweatpants that you own looks practically unused. You cry only for specific reasons and then you stop. Here's a suggestion from Jules on our Facebook group, the Precious group. You don't even remember that weird thing that you said in third grade, and you definitely don't stay up at night thinking about it.
Oh my gosh, that is so good, because I've been thinking about what it means that I cringe 3 or 4 times a day at things I said or thought 40 years ago, literally 40 years ago in third grade. That is really good. One thing I wanted to say regarding Josh Gondelman, with all honesty, is that it is truly remarkable how much empathy he has for people with mental illness, despite never walking in our shoes. That's really impressive, because it's so hard to get across to people who aren't either medical professionals or have endured it. So I he's really a special guy, and it's enviable and also incredibly annoying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he is the good boy of comedy.
I love that. I love that. That was the greatest nickname, because I've heard of 9 or 10 comedians being referred to as the bad boy of comedy, or the right. Yeah. Oh my right. Gosh, I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone's safe when Josh Gondelman is on stage.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Gary Gulman, congratulations on all your successes. And
thanks, man. I've been saying recently that, and I'm not trying to be glib, there has never been a better time to be mentally ill in history.
Yes, exactly. That's Gary Gulman, a wonderful comedian and dear friend. Check out his tour dates, won't you? They're at GaryGulman.com. Thank you to Josh Gondelman for taking my one joke premise and helping me get 25 minutes out of it. There was some good stuff in there, I thought, actually. Delivered through whimsy. After the break, we'll get centered.
Do you sometimes wonder whatever happened to the kids at your school who really loved Star Trek?
You might remember a kid like me, the one who read the Star Trek novels and built starship models. I also took music classes to avoid taking gym classes that required showering after, but I don't see what that really has to do with—
Or a kid like me. I introduced myself to kids at my summer camp one year as Wesley. But when the school year started and some of those kids were in my new class, I actually had to explain to my friends that I had tried to take on the identity of my favorite Star Trek character. The shame haunts me to this day.
I'm sure some of those Star Trek fans from your childhood grew up to have interesting and productive lives, but we ended up being podcasters.
On The Greatest Discovery, you'll hear what happens to two lifelong Star Trek fans who didn't grow up to be great people, but just grew up to be people who love jokes as much as they love Trek.
Season 4 of Star Trek Discovery is here, so listen to our new episodes every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun. It's the Thanksgiving season, and I want to take this opportunity to thank you, the members of Maximum Fun. This Max Fun Drive, your generosity and your love of pins helped us raise over $90,000 to help bridge the digital divide. Families without internet access struggle to do things that the rest of us might take for granted, especially during COVID. Going to school, applying for jobs, fighting medical care. Your donations help the nonprofit Everyone On. They provide equipment, services, and training to get people online so they can access opportunity. You can find out more about the great work Everyone On does at everyoneon.org. Thanks for supporting Maximum Fun. Thanks for supporting Everyone On. And thanks for being awesome people who want to do good in the world.
Well, let's take a meditation moment here. Let's get used to some silences coming out of your podcast. And if you're driving in a car and you want to participate, please pull over safely. Our friend Laura House is here, meditation instructor and co-host of the Tiny Victories podcast. Hi, Laura.
Hi, John.
Well, let's dive on in. Let's get amped and meditate.
Let's do this. Ugh. So we're just doing, so this is sort of a taste of meditation. I just really like to remind people, like, the, you can get that letting go feeling at any time. So here's all that we do is you sit comfortably wherever you are, close your eyes, going to want to have your back supported. So you can just relax and just notice your breath, like glancing in the direction of your breath. Even just notice that you are breathing. And just notice it, and you'll have thoughts, but just notice your breath. You can go ahead and open your eyes slowly. It's just a little bit of a reset. It's good to do before a big thing, after a big thing, any kind of midday check-in.
It's funny. You don't realize how fast your mind is always moving until it's not.
Yeah, till you pull over and watch watch the thoughts zoom by.
Safely to the side of the mental highway that we're all
exactly. Get on your mental shoulder.
You could find more of Laura on the Tiny Victories podcast or at laurahouse.com. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
You know, I like to call it a meditation moment instead of a meditation minute because I'd rather not be so hung up on time. Next time on Depression Mode, given a challenge, some people rise to meet that challenge. Others, not so much.
I initially started seeing a counselor because it was under some sort of like guise of I would like help organizing my life now that I've decided to take this different career path. But then the counselor was like, you're like deeply unwell. He was like, can we make it a challenge for you to not try to make me laugh for like one session? And I was like, no, thank you.
The absolutely delightful Brothy Gupta on anxiety, depression, and the inability to stop making jokes for a single goddamn hour. Hey, you know, if people support our show through a donation, we can keep being here together, and if not, we can't. If you already donate, you are making Depression Mode happen, and we thank you. If you are listening and haven't donated, don't worry, you can. It's easy. Find a level that works for you, MaximumFun.org/join, and let's keep this thing going. Did you know I wrote a book? Yeah, it's called The Hilarious World of Depression. It's a memoir. It's about me and mental health and life, and there are jokes in it. The Hilarious World of Depression is available where books are sold. You could try buying it where ice cream is sold, but I don't like your chances. The book got good reviews. People like the book. You should get the book. Be sure to hit subscribe on Depression Mode. Do so now and give us 5 stars. Write reviews. That helps more people find out about the show, which helps our mission of getting those conversations happening. Please know that the Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available 24/7 for free at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. The Crisis Text Line, also free, always available. Text the word HOME to 741-741. Please use our electric mail address, depressionmode@maximumfun.org. And we want 2 things from you in that electric mail inbox. 1, sounders, the little positive plug at the end of the show from listeners. Record on your voice message app and electric mail that to us. You're going to hear one of those sounders here in a second. You know, that's kind of what we're looking for. 2, your favorite moment from a Depression Mode episode. We're putting together an episode of epiphanic moments, the mind blowers, the things that you just really love. Record yourself telling us about that moment and electric mail that little voice message to us. depressionmode@maximumfun.org. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. We're on Twitter and Instagram at DepreshPod. Our Depression Mode newsletter is available on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter at John Moe. Hello, credits listeners. I know email doesn't refer to electric mail. It's electronic mail, but I'm sticking with calling it electric mail because that is funny to me, and it is a gift that I give to myself and to some among you. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason, maybe there's no reason, I just keep believing. No one knows the answer, maybe there's no answer, I just keep on dancing.
Hi, this is Mike in Connecticut. I know it feels overwhelming. I know it's difficult. But I also know that when you're ready to talk, someone will be ready to listen.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.